So before I say anything that could mess up anything that I'm about to say, let's pray. Dear God, I pray that as we start this hour or so of just unpacking what it is to grow closer to you, I pray that you would anoint this hour. Anoint us with your love and understanding that the words that are spoken tonight wouldn't be from us or from me, but it would be from you. Meet us all where we are so that we can all glorify you more. In your name I pray, amen. Well, so when I was found out that I'd be speaking in chapel, I was like, well, obviously I need to look good. So I was like, I'll just wear a tux because we all know Jeremy looks good in a tux. All joking aside, I'm here tonight to tell you all a really cool story. But before I get to the story part, we have to go through a bit of a human anatomy lesson about my brain. Fact, everyone has a brain. You might not use it much, but you got one. Fact, the brain is composed of two hemispheres or sides, a right and a left. Fact, the hemispheres are connected by more than 200 million nerve fibers. This grouping of fibers is called the midline, or the corpus callosum. The corpus callosum develops between the 12th and 16th week after birth. After conception. This gathering of nerves is what the two sides use to communicate with each other, so that you can do things that are called synapses. Now, the anatomy lesson is over. Let's get on to the story part, but you should still keep that in mind. In some cases, the corpus callosum doesn't get fully developed. This is known as agenesis of the corpus callosum. I realize that some of us may not know what agenesis of the corpus callosum means, so let me break it down a little bit more. So if the midline, this central nerve connection, doesn't fully develop, then the two halves of the brain aren't able to communicate properly with each other. This affects things that are called fine and gross motor skills. There are people in the world today whose brain isn't fully developed. The National Organization for Disorders of the Corpus Callosum believe that there's anywhere from 5 in a million to 7 in a 1,000 children born with this disorder every year. I know for a fact that there's 1 in at least 1,300 Asbury students with this disorder. If you haven't figured it out by now, I'm talking about me. I have partial agenesis of the corpus callosum. Because of this disorder, I have also have a disability that's called hydrocephalus, which is also known as water on the brain, hydro, water, cephalus, brain. Surrounding everyone's brain is a fluid called cerebral spinal fluid. We produce this fluid, we produce about a pint a day of this fluid, and it generally gets absorbed into our blood eventually. But in me, that's a little different because of this disability. So the blood doesn't absorb this cerebral spinal fluid, so it actually just builds up in my skull. If left untreated, it could obviously be fatal. I have this thing called a shunt in my brain that helps take the fluid and drain it into my abdominal cavity. Occasionally, the shunt can malfunction or break or have some kind of error. But then I get to have what's in the medical world called a routine brain surgery. Yeah, think about that, a routine brain surgery. Now, some of you guys have had migraines before, I'm sure. If you haven't, then I want you to picture like the worst headache you've ever had and then multiply that by like 10. And that's like what a migraine is. Now, take the migraine pain and multiply that by like 100. And that's what the pain that I get whenever I have a malfunction. Think of it like this. If you fill a balloon with a constant flow of water, eventually the balloon's gonna expand so much that it pops. Now put your skull as the balloon. It makes me cringe just thinking about it. All this disability combined with another disability that I have known as panhypopituitarism means that the life of Jeremy Kennedy Savala has been very difficult. And there's been a lot of obstacles. These obstacles are things that we all take for granted sometimes, like tying your shoes or riding a bike or driving a car or walking in a straight line while texting. Even small things like, you know, buttoning your shirt are very hard for me to overcome, and I've had to work very hard to overcome them. As a child, I would go to recess and then physical therapy. And physical therapy was interesting. It was a good descriptive word for that. The therapist would try so hard to make these activities seem fun. Now, they wouldn't be fun, but she would try so hard to make them fun. So for one activity that I would have to do, and I will never forget this as long as I live because it was so horrible, I would take rice grains, like individual rice grains from one bowl, and then pick them up and then move them into another, like, smaller cup over and over again. I do this for like an hour. I hate rice. The best way I can describe it, if you haven't figured it out by now, the best way I can describe it is picture your life the first 5 minutes of waking up. 5 to 10 minutes of waking up. Now live your entire life in those 5 to 10 minutes. I'm clumsy, uncoordinated, sloppy, goofy, sometimes smelly, but that's a different issue. And here's the cool part, and the part that I hope you guys will acknowledge more so than all the bad stuff that I just said. Like, I'm fine. I'm great. Most people who know me don't even realize that I have this disability. Because of these surgeries, I have some pretty awesome scars on my belly and my head. And I can remember, like, as a child, going to swimming pools or various things, like, you know, wherever kids would be, and be like, man, look at these weirdos. They don't have all this cool stuff on their belly like I do. Like they were the weird ones for not having the scars. I'm pretty sure I didn't even realize that I had scars. I just thought that's how I'm supposed to work. And while I can't ride a bike, I still can't. While I can't ride a bike, God has given me a gift of music. I play a lot of musical instruments. For a guy who should have a real problem with perception, depth perception, and finger movement, and balance, and a lot of great things, to be able to play instruments is amazing. And to be even able to play one instrument is amazing. And it wouldn't be possible if it weren't for God. Like, when I'm playing bass, I'm not Jeremy, the kid with the disability. When I'm playing bass, I'm Jeremy, God's beloved work of art. Now, I may be speaking a little highly of myself, but it's true. We are all God's workmanship, right? So we're beautifully and wonderfully created. I grew up, now a little bit about me now. I grew up in a Baptist church in California before moving to Indiana in 1998, where we joined a Methodist church. I was that kid growing up. We all know who that kid is, the one who goes to Sunday school every Sunday and knows all the Sunday school answers and can win all the Bible drills, and everyone in the church talks about it as the great, you know, the great Christian kid who's you know, going to do great things. And I've come to realize that my apparent knowledge of God and the things of the Spirit were so superficial. Like, sure, I may have been, like, awesome at finding the Romans Road when I was in fourth grade, and I may have been able to find it better than, like, any other fourth grader, but that doesn't mean that I'm a better Christian than them. I think on some level, that was because I was that good, and I did that well because I felt like I had to hide. I had to hide who I was. I didn't want people to know that I had this disability, that I didn't want people to know that Jeremy didn't really have all things together. I was great at playing the church game. My faith didn't really even become my faith until I went on a Chrysalis, young adult Chrysalis retreat 5 or so years ago. I've always been surrounded by great men and women of faith, but I didn't realize it until after that weekend. So now I'm going to take another little detour to talk about, like, why I'm here right now, talking in front of you guys. I've known about Asbury since ninth grade. Thanks to a very helpful guiding from a very important youth minister in my life. I don't think he went to Asbury, but he always had great things to say about it. In ninth grade, I knew I was going to Asbury. I had never been on the campus. I had never talked to admissions people. I'm pretty sure I had no idea where Wilmore, Kentucky was. But that didn't stop me. I'm going to Asbury. Everyone would say, "You going to Asbury?" I'm like, "Yep, going to Asbury." I went into my 12th grade year, as I was graduating, sure that I would go to Asbury, when my parents one day told me, "Hey, Jeremy, maybe Asbury isn't going to happen right away, because it's kind of expensive. And so what if you went to the junior college for a couple of years, got your gen ed requirements done, and then transferred to Asbury? It'd be like a lot cheaper. You can live at home. You can still have the college experience." Since they were paying the bill, I kind of had to agree. I went to the junior college for almost 3 years and hated it. Excuse me. There was no community there. There was no anything there. Finally, my parents, after this about 3 years, my parents were like, "Hey, we think you're ready for Asbury now." So I was like, finally, it's about time, right? As I started talking with the admissions people, more obstacles hit my way. Somewhere around 3 or 4 months before coming to Asbury, I had another shunt malfunction. Now, I didn't mention this before, but when I have a shunt malfunction, it's kind of like starting over. And by that, I mean I have to learn how to walk again. I have to learn how to write again. I have to learn how to feed myself. It's pretty much like starting over. And they're pretty dark times in multiple ways, but spiritually and physically and emotionally, just dark times. But even more so this last one, like Asbury, the holy city, was finally in my grasp. I felt like I was just sitting there like dangling it over my head, just out of my reach. And I struggled a lot with self-pity and just anger at God for this. I mean, I wasn't going to Asbury for me. I was going to Asbury so that I could be a youth pastor, so that I could bring youth, teenagers, into a better relationship with him through me. Another huge obstacle that I had to overcome was my GPA before coming to Asbury was a 2.49. I don't know if you guys know how the system here works, but you have to have a 2.5 GPA to get accepted here. Can I just tell you right now that 0.01% was so huge for me? So huge. Luckily, I have the love and support of two of the most amazing God-filled people that I will ever know, my mom and dad. My mom spent so many hours talking with the admissions people and filling out paperwork, and she did it with a smile on her face while I was grumbling the whole time. My mom explained to the admissions office that my GPA was based totally on me, without any help from the college that I was at previously for my disability. So then we arranged for me to meet with a lady in the Disabled Student Services Department. And at some point during the meeting, she mentioned, "Oh, and we'll have to run by the admissions office and pick up your acceptance packet." What? Like, my dad starts, like, freaking out. My mom's sitting there crying. And I'm just sitting there. I'm pretty sure my mouth was open. And I was just like, wow, I'm really here. It's really going to happen. I'm really going to be at Asbury in the spring. I don't think you guys can realize how huge that was for me. For someone who society looks at as underprivileged and maybe even to some degree less of a human, I was going to attend a college, well, now a university, that people knew about. I was one that many people had very high standards associated with. This is why I believe that God can work past the fact that small portions of my brain is underdeveloped, to allow me the ability to fulfill his purpose for my life. My life verse is Jeremiah 29:11, which I will paraphrase as, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to give you an amazing future." Hear this. I may not have part of my brain, and I may have enough prescription medication to supply all of trustees. And I may need to have a surgery from time to time. But I've come to realize that that's all in God's plan for me. I know that if God has a plan for me, he will be there to see me through it. So as it says in 2 Corinthians 12, I'm going to boast all the more greatly in my weakness so that the power of Christ can dwell in me. For when I am weak, then I am strong. I love that. Like, being able to boast about God's power in me. I kind of just want to, like, walk around the street and be like, I got the power. I mean, that's just so amazing. Backtracking a little bit more. On January 31st this past year, I participated in Asbury's 24/7 prayer initiative. I was praying that Monday, one of my first slots. I was praying from 5 to 7 p.m. And my quiet times usually consist of reading and reading scripture and praying and also playing bass. Now, to give you a bit of a backstory for that, for the year before that, I had been struggling with carpal tunnel. Carpal tunnel is like an intense joint pain in your hands or joint muscles, and it acts up whenever you play bass or play an instrument or talk on the phone for a long time or type for a long time. So this pain was there for about a year. I've been struggling with this pain. Now, back to the 31st. So I'm doing this prayer thing, and I'm praying along and singing. I'm pretty sure I had a song on. I don't remember what it is right now, but that's not important. I'm playing the song, and it's talking about healing. And so finally I just said, God, I believe that you can heal me. I believe that you've healed people in the past. I believe that you're going to continue to heal people, and it's already done. So I'm just going to accept that right now and trust that you can do it. So God, just come heal my carpal tunnel. And then, like, something out of, like, that Channel 20, like the televangelist dude, like, my hands started, like, shaking. And then I looked at him and I said, stop it. And they stopped shaking and the pain went away. I've played bass. I've played many instruments since that time. And I don't have any pain. My God healed my carpal tunnel. Wow. Wow. Medical stuff has pretty much been my life. For a guy who's been in and out of doctor's offices for every 3 months since he was born, for God to show me how he could and wanted to use me and heal me, it still astonishes me. So what does this mean for us? What does this mean for us? God can get us through anything. Fact. I believe that God has a plan for you. I believe that with every fiber of my being. We are living testaments of God's work. We can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. Now, I've had dark times where I wasn't close to God, but he's always been close to me. It's like he's standing right in front of me, and he's just looking at me and saying, Jeremy, I'm right here. I'm not going anywhere. Just come to me and live. And he's doing that for all of you tonight, too. Sure, you'll have problems in life. But if you keep the faith in your heart, and you have the support of great family and friends through love, then God can rock your socks off. And if that doesn't excite you or empower you to do great things, then come find me, and I'll be excited for you. Thank you.
Well, hello. I am Savannah Nisbet, and I was invited to speak with you all tonight. So you may be wondering who this other person on stage with me is, but I'll explain that. The way God works is really crazy, and so I found out yesterday that when I was trying to decide what to tell you all about, that I really didn't have anything to say on my own. I had some stuff that needed to be said, but it needed to be said in conjunction with my friend Scott. So, to give you a little background, Scott and I started dating about 2 years ago. 2 years ago, he started pursuing me, and I wasn't interested at all. I was really happy with how things were, and I was single and growing in the Lord, and I felt like that's where I needed to be, and Scott continued to pursue me, and I continued to feel like God said, wait, move forward, go ahead. So I did, and it was good. And Scott and I started dating, and we dated and had an ideal relationship for our whole first year of dating. Scott is creative and came up with awesome dates, and things were great. I can't explain it to you anymore, but all I want to say to you right now is that that first year was awesome, and then we started hitting some turbulence, and it just got difficult. But things get difficult. Life gets difficult. So you push through, which is what I did. I pushed through, and it got better. And then it got hard again. And then it got better, and then it got hard again, and better and hard. And it was this cycle of turbulence and then better. And then about 3 weeks ago, I woke up on a Wednesday, and my 8 a.m. class had been canceled. And I felt like I had had a good, quiet time, and I was praying for the Lord to kind of order my morning because it was free that day. And I felt like God said, get in the shower and get ready. So I did. I got in the shower and got ready. And the day before, I had written this letter to Scott, but I had not intended on giving it to him. But I felt God say, finish the letter and take it over to him, to his house. So I did. And he wasn't home, so I left a bag of his things and a letter with his brother at their house. And I felt a complete peace about it. And I didn't know why I had done it. But I felt like I had done what God told me to do.
Something Savannah forgot to tell you, or didn't forget, but left out. We had a little bit of friction Monday and Tuesday night leading up to that letter. Some unkind words were said, especially from me. And when I got home that night, I met my brother in the kitchen. And he said, kind of somberly, Savannah left something for you in your bedroom. And I thought to myself, all right, she's apologizing, leaving me a few notes here and there. That's kind of where I was at. I was very selfish. I didn't think I did anything wrong. Why should I have to apologize to Savannah? She's doing the job for me. I walked in and immediately saw a bag and knew exactly what had happened. As I picked up the bag, tears just began to roll from my face as I was just broken and realizing that our relationship was over, and she was ending it with me. But as I read on and read, just as she explained some stuff and things how I had not said the nicest things and was just cruel to her at times, biting sarcasm. Savannah is a very sweet young lady, and I was not treating her as she deserved nor any young lady. And as I read that more and more, I started to get broken, not so much about my relationship with Savannah, but my relationship with God. Things were just not well there, and it was so apparent to me. Dr. Kinlaw, who the library is named after, has a book called Let's Start With Jesus. In it, he writes, our relationships with others are not, first of all, what spoil our relationship with God. The fact is that our relationship with God is the key to all other relationships. When it is deficient, all other relationships go wrong. She said about a year ago, our relationship kind of got dicey. I was a senior here last year at Asbury, and not knowing what was next, I didn't know, would I have a job? Would I go to grad school? Where would I live? Too many questions and not enough faith on my part. And I started taking back control of my life and saying, God, you know, you're not answering any of my questions fast enough. You're not helping me out. I'm going to have to do this on my own slightly. And I just left the slightest point in my life for the devil to get a hold of, and he took it and ran with it. And things were not well at all. I was broken and honestly have not cried that hard in my whole life. I walk into the kitchen to eat with my brother, And he looks at me and says, "This might hurt, but I think you need to talk to Dr. Kinlaw." See, my brother and I are privileged enough to live with Dr. Kinlaw. And immediately I just started running upstairs, and I walk in upstairs where he's at. And thankfully he was in his kitchen. I just started crying. And he said, "Sit down, sit down." And I started to explain to him what was going on in my life, what had happened with Savannah. And after a few minutes, I knew what I needed to do. I went back to the basement door, I yelled down to my brother, said, "Mark, come on up." And there with the two of them, I knew my life was not good where it was at, and I had to surrender everything to Christ. And there kneeling with Dr. Kinlaw and with my brother, it was a joyous moment as I completely surrendered 100% of my life to Christ. Thank you. There's a lot of pain from that letter from Savannah, but the joy of the Lord was so, so much greater. You know, I thought with the change in my life, things would be different with Savannah. I had called her later on that night, told her what had happened. I wrote her a letter the next day and sent some flowers to her. And I thought, all right, my life is different, God. Now my relationship with Savannah can be different. And she contacted me on that Saturday, just about 3 days later, and said, "Let's meet together tomorrow and talk." And I went with excitement and with energy, knowing, Lord, I am different. You can make this different, and all is going to be good.
So we went to meet at Panera, and I was really nervous about the whole thing and knew that I couldn't do it alone, which is the beauty of community here at Asbury. So I asked my friends to take me, and they dropped me off at Panera, and I was ready to cry going in, holding back the tears. And I saw Scott sitting at the table, and I just smiled like a fool, like I couldn't help but smile. And so I sat down, and he was able to tell me what had gone on the past few days in his life and the way that God had worked in mighty ways. And we could just sit in Panera and rejoice together, and it was pretty awesome. So I'm doubting everything that I came in there to say. And I'm praying, like, God, tell me what I'm supposed to do, because everything in me wants to stare at him and say, "Pursue me." But I knew that I had come in there to say, "We can't talk for a while. I'll contact you. You contact me." And so I knew that's what I had to say. And I did. And I felt completely at peace about it. I left there totally confused if I had done the right thing, and yet totally certain that I had. I just felt a flood of peace.
You know, when you open up your life completely to Christ, you're bound to learn some amazing lessons. And that was about to happen over the next couple of weeks. And still is happening as we speak. She felt an incredible peace as she drove away. I, on the other hand, was broken and down. I didn't know what had happened. I was confused. I was frustrated. God, you have changed my life. Why didn't you change my relationship with Savannah? And thank the Lord, it caused me to draw on him and not draw back on that relationship with Savannah. And thankfully, at Free Methodist that week, it was Revival Week. And it was a chance to go every evening and just be in the Word with other believers and be encouraged. Monday night, Dr. Olswat talked about love and letting the love of Jesus come through you and accepting it, and through that, loving others. And my love for Savannah was beginning to grow more and more day by day. I'm like, God, I just want to go love Savannah, show her this great love, and yet, In my thinking, she's completely turned off and doesn't want me to. The next night, I go, and Dr. Olswat says something along the lines of, "You need to get to the point where your desires are not, you do not force your desires upon God, but you desire what he desires." And as the closing song started up, I turned to my brother. I said, "Mark, I just need to go surrender Savannah." And I went up and surrendered Savannah, and you know, you would have thought it was easy, and I do say the Lord was good, and he met me, and he helped me that night, but it was consistent surrender. I had to surrender at least another 10 times that night, the next morning as soon as I got up, throughout the day, time after time after time again, and it was really causing me to just draw on the Lord. Wednesday night of that week, I don't exactly remember what Dr. Olswat talked about, but I remember just leaving so excited at what just new spiritual things were happening in my life. And with Savannah being my best friend, there's no one else I wanted to share it with than her. And yet, I couldn't. Over the next couple of days, just the pain and the hurt from that just continued to grow as I just was realizing I just really care and admire her, and yet I can't show her. Sunday night of that week, I walk in back home after an evening church service. Dr. Kinlaw is up, and I kind of knock in and say, "Dr. Kinlaw, how are you?" He says, Scotty, come here. Come in, how are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm really struggling right now. I thank God for what he's done in my life, but man, I really care and admire and love Savannah and just want to show her how much I care and love her." And he said, "You're learning an important lesson right now." And I'm thinking some romance lesson is coming up right now. And he says, "The pain and hurt you're going through right now is the same pain and hurt that God goes through when he pursues after us and we reject his love and we don't accept his love." And you know, if this whole thing happened just to learn that lesson, amen to that. I can now look and be like, "God, I want to accept your love. I see how much you love me. I have a tangible experience now of the same thing. And yet his is so much stronger and so much more intense, how much he loves us and how many of us reject it or at times don't draw from it and don't go to him for our refuge." The next morning, I woke up and came across Psalm 73, verse 25 and 26. And it reads, "Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever." You know, as soon as I read that, I knew, Lord, Savannah so much rivals you in my desire for you. There is to be nothing that rivals you in heaven or on earth. You are to be my one true desire. I can live without Savannah. I can live without my family, a job, friends, whatever it may be. I can't live without Christ. I've come to realize without Christ, I am nothing. And you know, it's been a process and still continues to be a process, but I needed to get to the point where I could honestly say, if I lose everything, I'm still good because I have Jesus. You are my one true desire in heaven and here on earth. And it's a scary thing to pray, but at the same time, it's so freeing when it's true.
So throughout these weeks of not talking to Scott, I actually missed him. I know it sounds like I'm cold-hearted and didn't, but he is my best friend, and I missed him a lot. And it was really hard every day to want to talk to him and not to be able to. But I found a lot of strength in Psalm 62:8, which says, "Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us." I want to invite you to find some kind of peace in that tonight too, as I continue with the story. But basically, I was missing him, and I was not talking to him because I just felt like I needed to wait on God. So this past week, I went to Colorado Springs, and I went to the Air Force Academy for a character and leadership symposium. And on Friday, I was really missing him, and I really wanted to talk to him, but I felt like it was okay. And so I called, kind of out of the blue. And, well, very out of the blue. We hadn't talked in a while. And we had about a 20-minute conversation, and it was completely natural and completely normal. And we just caught up about what God's been teaching us. And it was short in some ways. We didn't catch up on all the details, but we were able to say, "God is so good, and he's working in your life, and he's working in mine, and that's a good place to be." So then, yesterday I was getting ready to go to church, actually not go to church, and I decided I just didn't want to go. Like, I go to church every Sunday, but I decided this week that I had too much to do. I'd come back from this trip, and I had this thing I was supposed to speak at tonight, and I didn't have anything to say. And so I needed to just stay home and figure it all out. And my Skype was on my computer for whatever reason, and my dad Skyped me, which he doesn't do. We have phones. So it was really bizarre that he Skyped me, actually. And so I answer it, and I say, "Hi, Dad, I'm sitting in my pajamas," and there he is. And he says, "So you getting ready for church?" And I was like, "Actually, no, I'm not going to go today." And he was like, "Oh, yeah, you probably are tired. You just need some rest." And I was like, Yeah, I just don't want to go, actually. And so he said, "Well, Savannah, maybe when you don't want to go is when you need to go the most." And I was like, "All right, I have 20 minutes, no shower, all right." So I get ready really fast, and I'm grabbing clothes, putting makeup on, trying to do something with my mess of hair, and the thought occurs to me that I had nothing to say, but Scott had a lot to say. God had been doing a lot in his life. And then I thought, "Lord, if that is my idea, get it out of my head immediately, because that is an uncomfortable situation. I have not talked to him in 3 weeks. And if I have to figure out a way to say, 'Hey, do you want to speak tomorrow?' It's going to be weird." But I tried to forget it. And instead, it was at the forefront of my mind, and I rushed into church late, and I sat at the back, and Scott's whole family, who was visiting for the weekend, was sitting a few rows in front of me, and I just stared at them all and didn't know what to do. And the sermon happened to be on trusting the Lord and obeying him, and it happened to be on, like, when God gets your attention that you should just give in. So about halfway through the sermon, I took out my pencil and wrote on my bulletin, "Scott, would you consider sharing with me at Student Renewal and Revival Week? Please let me know." And after the service, I walked up to him and handed him the paper airplane that I'd made of this.
And I looked at it. I waited about a split second. I had 1,000 thoughts go through my head and said, "Yes." You see, Savannah and I weren't together when she gave me this yesterday. As a matter of fact, we're not together now. And you're probably thinking, "You guys are crazy." And I kind of think we're crazy too. But you know what? The Lord is good. And the love of Jesus is so strong in both of our hearts. Throughout this whole time, now, as well as when I first got the letter, there's not been a sense of anger, a sense of frustration towards each other. But just as we are both drawn on Jesus, his love has just come through us time after time again while we were apart. And here together, yet there's still just the love of Jesus flows between us. And I couldn't say no to that and not show her this new love of Jesus that is in me, as well as share with you the rest, the power behind Jesus and what he can do.
So basically, last semester, I introduced someone in chapel and I told you guys about this phrase that my dad says. He said it all my life and it meant nothing. And more recently, it has meant a lot. And this whole year, he's been pounding it into my head. And it is, "Today I will not struggle and try, but I will surrender and trust." And for me, I had no idea that God was going to show me that in this way. But he did in lots of ways. And the only thing I knew that I needed to share from the beginning when they said submit an outline, I knew I needed to share that it's not about struggling and trying. Like, that's not what we're supposed to do. That's not what God asked us to do. He asked us to surrender and to trust and to obey him. And to do it when it doesn't make any sense at all, because none of this made any sense. I've tried to explain it to my mom or my friends or people around me, and it doesn't make a darn bit of sense. It's just a big mess, but God deals with our messes if we're obeying him. So I ask you today to give up the fight, to stop struggling, stop trying. Just give it over. I don't know where you stand. I don't know if you haven't given 100% to Jesus, but if you haven't, do it. And if you have, do it again every single day, every single moment, because that's what it is. It's a daily thing. It's a daily struggle. and a daily surrender. But just in closing, please think about that. Think about where you are. Think about how you can trust God more, how you can obey him more, and how you can glorify him through that.
About 2 years ago, when I was pursuing after Savannah, as she mentioned, she was very comfortable where she was at and didn't really want to be in anything. We were to get together some Friday evening and talk where things were at. And I knew going into it, she was not interested, and I was a nervous wreck. That morning in chapel, we sang the song, Great is Thy Faithfulness. And just a flood of peace came over me. Realizing that God is faithful. Whether we were to get together or not, whether we will get together or not now, whatever happens, God is faithful and good. And that song has become my favorite hymn since that day and continues to be my favorite hymn. And just, I'm going to read the last verse because it's so much what I've been going through these last 3 weeks. It says, pardon for sin and peace that endureth. God did pardon my sin on that Wednesday evening in the kitchen of Dr. Kinlaw's office. Thine own air presence to cheer and to guide. Strength for today and bright hope for tomorrow. Blessings are mine with 10,000 beside. I had to draw my strength from God every day. I could not do it on my own. I could not draw it from anyone else. It could only come from God, and it came day after day after day again. And he continued to bless me and just give me hope. Great is thy faithfulness, great is thy faithfulness. Morning by morning, new mercies I see. All I have needed, thy hand hath provided. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto me. I just challenge you, God is faithful. Would you just accept that faithfulness and love from him?